97.5, The Fanatic.
For every winning team, a key to success is learning the playbook. That's true in football, and it's also true as we take on the coronavirus. The spread of the coronavirus is a serious matter, but there's a game plan for keeping residents as safe as possible. Everyone has a role to play as we face this challenge together. Cover your cough with your elbow like this. Wash your hands thoroughly, a full 20 seconds. If you're sick, stay home. If you think you should be tested, phone your health provider first. Avoid close contact with anyone who's sick. Protect your at-risk family members, including the elderly. If you're not at risk, take care as you go about your daily business. Get the facts now from coronavirus.gov and your state health department. We're all in this together. Let's team up to protect our health.
The voice of the Philly sports fan. 97.5, The Fanatic. WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia.
A Beasley Media Group station.
Home of the Sixers and Flyers.
Oh, man, Coach O. You know, it's kind of funny with Coach O doing that PSA there, because on one hand, what he's saying is exactly correct. Everything he said is spot on. And then on the other hand, all I can think of when I hear Coach O talk is the coach from The Waterboy, where no one can ever understand what he says. Like, you remember that time Bobby Boucher, and then it was just, like, grumbles for 10 seconds? That's how I feel Coach O is, but he's incredible.
Or you were expecting a Go Tigers at the end?
Yeah, I was waiting for Go Tigers or, you know, the Mud Dogs won the Bourbon Bowl. One of the two. I didn't know which one it was. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli and Nat Marlowe here with you until 8 o'clock on The Fanatic. But what he said is spot on. And I've been preaching this for the last couple of weekends because I've had the opportunity to sit on this side of the glass a couple of times over the last couple of weekends. Despite the fact that we are in a very tough situation, an unprecedented situation, something we've never faced before, we have the ability to laugh at Coach O and have conversations like, who was the player that you want that you were the most sad to see leave Philadelphia? Who do you think was weird in a different uniform than what they spent most of their career with? The reason that we can have that conversation is because we are given the opportunity to help keep some normalcy in our lives. I know everything is crazy right now. I've been saying this for the last 2 weeks. We're here for you. So while the topics at hand have been, you know, jersey related, they've been who was tough to say goodbye to. We've got a couple more topics to discuss just in a little bit. While they've been the driving force of this show today so far, throughout the last 2 weeks and throughout the next couple of weeks or months or however long this thing takes us to combat and beat, we're here to have conversations with you. We're here to discuss how you're coping. We're here to discuss what you're doing on a daily basis. We're here to, I will take your call if you want to complain to me about the TV show that your wife or husband, boyfriend or girlfriend, brother or sister, mom or dad is watching that's driving you crazy. If there's anything out there that you are saying, this is keeping me going, we're happy to have that conversation as well. We are, despite the fact that there has been some structure to this show, we're an open forum. We've become that with sports being tabled. We have structure on this program for the last 2 hours, and we're going to have structure for the next 2 hours. But the one thing that I like to do, and Nat, you and I were able to have that conversation yesterday. We're doing it again today. We can pivot at a moment's notice, because we are having fun conversations. And we're going to get to, I promise you, we are going to get to the quality versus quantity trade conversation. I promise you we're going to get to it. Because Larry brought it up 45 minutes ago, and I've been teasing it for the last 45 minutes. Maybe it's the ultimate team. Maybe you're, hey, who knows? Maybe you're sitting at home being like, just have him hanging on until he says, what do you want us going to talk about?
We'll wait until the final segment at 7:50.
Yeah, maybe that's keeping you hanging on. So if it is, I appreciate you staying with us. But the one thing that I did want to discuss, because I was at home today leading up to this show, and it got me thinking, because I was on YouTube, and I, as I often do, fell into a YouTube rabbit hole. And I stumbled upon a person who plays piano, and the notes, you know, it's almost like Guitar Hero for piano, and the notes come towards you, and it's the guy is playing movie scores and famous songs, but he's teaching you how to play piano at the same time. But what I got out of it was I fell in the rabbit hole of watching all the movie scores. And it got me thinking when I came to a specific movie about how particular one scene is to that movie. And the movie that I'm referring to is the 2019 movie Avengers Endgame. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you. It's been almost a year since this movie has come out. The spoiler bans have been lifted. If I'm going to ruin this movie for you right now by giving you a specific scene, I'm sorry. But the movie's been out for almost a full calendar year. In the Avengers movie, in Endgame, the scene where Captain America stands up to fight Thanos by himself, the entire army that Thanos puts together. And then you hear Falcon come in and say, "Hey, Cap, on your left." And the portals open up, and every Avenger of all time comes back, and all of Wakanda comes out to help Captain America, and they've got this massive army. It got me thinking. This is the single greatest scene in the history of movies. We've had movies now for over 100 years. This is the single greatest scene to ever hit the big screen. For multiple reasons. One, it was the graphics of the scene, the ability to have all of the Avengers walk in from different portals was breathtaking. It was an amazing feat of cinematography. Two, it was the climax of a 15-year run spanning 22 movies. It was the official end to everything us Marvel fans have sat through. And not only that, even if you're not a Marvel fan, even if you're a casual fan who has seen some of the movies and you like some of the action scenes, the ability to sit there and give you chills, and you get chills from watching those portals open up and watch Doomsday become victory across film, was unprecedented to me. Now, I will tell you this. I'm a guy, from the time that I saw this movie, I didn't see it when it came out because, again, I was four. Probably a good thing I didn't see it. But I saw this movie for the first time when I was 13. And that movie was Saving Private Ryan. And Saving Private Ryan, to me, is still my favorite movie of all time. It still is, bar none. If you were to say you get one movie for the rest of your life, it's Saving Private Ryan. I have never been so enamored with one particular scene the first time that I watched said scene as I was the first time that I watched the opening 15, 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. I thought it was realistic, awesome, scary. I was on the edge of my seat. I was afraid. All of those emotions hit me at once because it was the most realistic war scene I have ever seen in my life.
I would argue it still is.
It may still be to this day the most realistic war scene of all time.
And that came out in 1998.
Right. That goes to show you that everything from 60 years back or 70 years back was not as good, and everything in the last 22 years was not as good. Even though, from what I've heard, I haven't seen the movie, 1917 is amazing. That, to me, was the greatest single scene in all of cinema up until the portals opened up in the end of Avengers Endgame and all of the Avengers walked through. Am I wrong in thinking that a movie that is, when it was first announced that they were making this MCU, was definitely a niche audience? It grew to a much wider audience, but in the beginning, it was niche, because when it first started, I was not much of a Marvel fan. I liked the X-Men, and that was about it. My brother and my dad were huge fans. Watched the TV shows, the cartoons, wanted to watch all the movies, read the comic books. But by the end, I felt like I was with a family with this MCU. So am I totally off track in thinking that the culmination of a 15-year window of 21 movies, that being the 22nd of the MCU, is not the greatest scene in all of cinema? I truly, and this is my opinion, Nat, you can give me yours if you think that I'm totally off base, but in my opinion, nothing beats the three things that I proposed, where you have made MCU fans for life out of casual fans. It was the climax of a 21-movie, 15-year run, and the cinematography was top-notch. All three of those things come together. If it's not one of the greatest, or if it's not the greatest, it's got to be one of the greatest, and I'm willing to put it at number one.
You know what I have to say about that, Tyler? I 100% agree with you.
There you go. That's I feel like I need it verification. I feel like I needed some kind of agreement, because I maybe have gone out on a limb in my own life, because, like I said, I wasn't a big MCU guy when it started. But the way that something can hook you when it's not in your forte, to me, is more important than watching a movie that you know you're going to enjoy.
And for me, when it comes to a movie scene, like, there's plenty of iconic movie scenes out there. I mean, like the ending to Raiders of the Lost Ark, the iconic shower scene from the movie Psycho, tons of tremendous scenes.
Yep.
But to me, in almost any story, the ending is paramount. And the way Avengers Endgame ended with that portal scene, you got to put that up there as one of the best, if not the best movie scenes of all time.
When I said that it encapsulated a non-MCU fan into becoming like this super fan that goes to the... I went from not caring at all to watching them when they would come out on DVD to legitimately going to see every single one in the theaters, to the point where I had backlogged Captain Marvel, to the point where myself, my dad, and my brother went to like a 4 o'clock showing of Captain Marvel, went and got dinner, and went to a 10 o'clock showing of Avengers Endgame the same day. The ability to do that, I think, is unprecedented and is bigger to me than anything in a movie that I would already watch. So I'll put it to you this way. I'm a history nerd. I have a second degree in history. That's the kind of stuff that I love. I grew up liking history class. I grew up liking war movies. I grew up loving listening to stories of, you know, and my forte is that, like, the Revolutionary War era. But I watched Saving Private Ryan for the first time knowing that I was going to like the movie. I watched the first Iron Man for the first time very skeptical. That, to me, is what puts it over the top. 610-632-0975. So on top of the conversation of the player that was the toughest to get to say goodbye to, and the player that you thought looked the oddest in a different jersey than what they spent most of their career in, a la Tom Brady's going to look in 2020 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, tell me if you agree or disagree with me that the portal scene in Avengers Endgame is the greatest scene in the history of movies. Because to me, it absolutely is. 610-632-0975. Let's go out to Steve on the cell. You're up next, Steve. What's up?
Yeah, I'm pretty much a history guy, too.
Sure.
And for some reason, I'm totally tuned in to D-Day, June 6, 1944,
sure.
And the day June 6. So when I turned 8 years old, my mom brought me a record album, and on it was a steel helmet with a bayonet on it. It was the 20th anniversary of D-Day. I still have that album.
Okay.
And I would say, coming up to 1984, the 40th anniversary of D-Day, I started to do my reading. And ever since then, I have screensavers, a Point du Hoc, and all this. So Private Ryan, Saving Private Ryan, came out July 24th, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
I was counting down the days. I was talking to my buddies playing hockey about it. Hey, you got to see this movie. You got to see this movie. So everything I wanted to see, the landscape, you know, the heights that they had to attain, how they broke through the Germans, why they shot German prisoners dead after that beating they took. I was all for that. After all, you're losing your buddies, right? And you want to seek vengeance. And they did. I mean, that's a nasty point I'm making right there. But would you believe this picture did not win an award? It was up to, like, Shakespeare in Love to win it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Of which, Roberto Benigni's movie, I think, was a lot better than Shakespeare in Love. You're a history guy. Did you watch that one?
I did not. I have not seen it yet. But to go back to your point about the opening scene, I felt, you know, like I said, I was 13 when I saw it for the first time, so I didn't see it nearly on opening day. It was, you know, almost 10 years later after it had premiered that I saw it for the first time. And at 13 years old, the amount of emotions that ran through me, the fear, the excitement, the energy, and this is a scene in which you know how it's going to play out. You're just looking to see how they do it on the big screen. That, to me, was what made it to me, the up until I watched Avengers, the greatest scene of all time.
Yeah, I don't know the Avengers movie you're talking about, but I think we've been, like, not only Avengered out, but Marveled out. I mean, you know, we're looking for heroes. There's other places to find heroes rather than, you know, people, you know who wear capes. That being said, I could say, like, Superman 1 and 2 are in my top 15 movies. But back to that scene, Stephen Ambrose was giving Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg so much information, and you know, Steven actually lied about a couple of things too, as far as his his history goes. Did you realize that?
No, I did not actually.
Yeah. So Google it up, and you know, he said a couple of things that, you know, weren't facts, but sure. You know. But they caught him for it, and you're not supposed to do that. But anyway, I'm so glad you said that. I don't know you much, but I'm proud of you for saying that. I mean, what those soldiers did for countries that later on didn't appreciate what we did for them, but the French absolutely love those guys who gave their lives.
Steve, I appreciate the phone call, Steve. Thanks so much for being a history guy like myself. It's very seldom. I think that in generations prior to mine, and I don't mean to date Steve and put a gap between the two of us, but in generations prior to mine, there is a much greater respect for the historical stories of, especially, you know, World War I and World War II, because of the prominence of, in generations past, this was their dads, brothers, uncles. And for us, you know, the generation that Nat and I find ourselves in, it was our grandparents, our great-grandparents. It loses a little bit of, I don't want to say luster, because there's no luster in war, but it loses a little bit of its, I guess, importance. I think that for somebody like myself, I'm so enamored with how history was shaped, how worlds were shaped, how countries were shaped, that Saving Private Ryan, to me, to get it back to the movie scene point, Saving Private Ryan, to me, at 13, solidified that I was going to be a history nerd for life. It solidified the fact that when everybody else was complaining about reading this chapter in the textbook, I wanted to know what happened next. Now, granted, there are people that I know that are people that love math and science and can't get enough of the difference in formation of rocks and can't get enough of the periodic table and, you know, calculus and things like that. I was bored senseless. I guess my brain doesn't work that way. But to get it back to that scene, that to me was the first, you know, and I'd seen a lot of movies, but I was finally getting into, I guess you would call them more adult movies, because I was a teenager now and seeing some more, not adult, don't want to put it that way, more mature.
More in the trust tree. Yeah. It's okay.
More mature movies, I guess you would say. I was getting the chance to watch that. That was the first time where I sat and I got done watching that scene and I almost felt like I watched the movie, like in its entirety. And it was the opening 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan.
And with your appreciation of history, like that falls, like with my love, like for some of the old school Call of Duty games and their connection to history, especially the games Call of Duty World at War,
yes,
and Call of Duty Black Ops 1.
Yes. The older Call of Duty. Now, you know, now they're kind of getting into a spot where it almost seems unrealistic with like war in space. And I know that is, if not happening, or it's on the forefront of happening. But they to me don't seem realistic.
Those and their last World War II game was not good by any means.
Right. And that's the thing, is so you have to harken back to the older games to get that appreciation. So whether you find it through TV, the video game outlet, TV outlet, movie outlet, I think for the most part, people are doing a decent job of keeping history alive. it might skew it a little bit if you're playing video games because of the factor of it not being real. But I think at the same token, it's keeping us alive, a younger generation knowledgeable about history. And that's, to me, why it was, for the most part, for a long time in my life, for probably over half of my life, the greatest film scene of all time, until Avengers Endgame took over. 610-632-0975. Let's continue the conversation. B-Wills and Autobahn, you're up next. What's up, man?
All right, so the DeAndre Hopkins trade, you know, Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady trade, you know, or not trade, my bad, but like, you know, free agency signing. I really think, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, that was horrible. Bill O'Brien should never have even bring that up as a possibility.
Terrible trade.
If they wanted to rebuild, they should never have rebuilt that way. You know, rebuilt in that way. I think they should have honestly taken their time, put some deep, deep looking into the XFL, honestly, because of like a G League in a way. Or your second option, get younger depth from the draft. You know what I mean?
So instead of simply trading away Hopkins, you're looking more so to find his replacement, if not internally, to find it more so via the cheap option.
Yes.
Okay, so here's my only question to you, and I agree with you. I think it's a horrible trade. I think it was a terrible trade to go and get an aging running back with injury problems to get rid of one of the best receivers in the NFL. Here is my devil's advocate question to you. If the Texans realize that they're in a rebuilding process, is not the best way to fully rebuild trade your best player to get the assets?
True. You're right.
So it's a catch-22 because it brings up the conversation that we were having with Larry and Boise earlier and that we're going to get into in a little bit, trading quality for quantity. I asked you that almost devil's advocate because I don't believe in it, but at the same time, we talked about it earlier with the Sixers in the mid-2000s. Where do you want to be? Do you want to be in the bottom with a direction or in sports purgatory with very little direction?
Yeah, do you want to be the center of attention, or do you want to obviously tank and find your beliefs and look better?
That's exactly right. And so real quick, before we let you go and head to the next break, you have a strange jersey that stands out to you?
Yeah, honestly, for the longest time, Brady, I cannot believe he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
There you go, and that's what really sparked the entire conversation today, but that's a good one nobody has brought up. Nobody seems to be weirded out by the fact that he's going to be a Buck next season.
Yeah, and for his 2 years, and you know, now it's going into Tampa, the Super Bowl. Could he potentially make history? I think so.
Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate that. 610-632-0975. He believes that Brady could make history, and I'm assuming what he's referring to is he believes Brady could be the first quarterback to take his team to a Super Bowl that the Super Bowl is being played in their host city. Tampa Bay is hosting the Super Bowl this season in 2020. I don't believe that. I don't think the Bucs are good enough to get it done, but let's see if Brady has anything left in him. 610-632-0975. Nat, I promise you. You hold me to this if you can. I promise you, on the other side, we're going to have the quality over quantity conversation.
The other side. All right, I got you.
This next segment, if I don't do it, you can yell at me on the air. You can yell at me. We're going to do it, I promise you. 610-632-0975. That's Nat Marlowe. I'm Tyler Zuli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
So we made mention earlier in the show that one thing that we're able to do here outside of discuss sports and the greatest movie scenes of all time is keep you live and local and keep you, as we hope, entertained. Another thing that we can do, and this involves you, involves us too, but it also involves you, is set up Operation Local, Shop Local. Because of the fact that small businesses are our backbone of our local community, right now you could give them some help. So we're introducing 97.5 The Fanatics Operation Shop Local. It's our initiative to set up encouraging you to get gift card purchases from your local businesses and to highlight those offering home delivery or curbside pickup. For our business owners, you can go to 97.5thefanatic.com and list yours in our free directory. The Fanatic is promoting this to our listeners to review and patronize whenever possible. Operation Shop Local is what it's called, so please help out if you can. We're all going to stand in this together. That's from both the Beasley Media Group and us here at 97.5 The Fanatic. It allows us to help each other out. I understand that monetarily speaking, things are difficult. Things are difficult for everybody. But if you have an extra couple of bucks hanging around, one of the things that I highly recommend is this shopping local and buying gift cards to your local, whether it's your local restaurant, your local deli, your local hairdresser. These people need your help. They are your people. They're everyday people who live in your community, work in your community, and you know them. They cut your hair. They clean your groceries. They do all of these kind of things to keep your community going. Help them out. They need it. So if you've got a couple extra bucks, go into Operation Shop Local and help one of your fellow community members out. 610-632-0975. All right, Nat, I promised you. I promised everybody that we would get to this. I don't want to get yelled at by my producer. I don't get a chance to step on this side of the glass enough to be yelled at by my producer today. We had a conversation with Larry from Boise, Idaho, now about an hour and 45 minutes ago, that when we were discussing players that were tough to see let go, players that were tough to say goodbye to, he mentioned Curt Schilling going to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the one thing that he mentioned that got my attention was that it is quality over quantity, and you never receive back in quantity over what you gave up in quality. Now, here's what the Phillies gave up in the Curt Schilling deal that sent him to the Arizona Diamondbacks, or the, what they got in exchange. Travis Lee, Vicente Padilla, Nelson Figueroa, Omar Dahl. Any of those names excite you? Looking back 20 years later.
I remember Padilla, but that's about it.
Any of those names that you truly remember how what kind of impact they made? You remember Padilla. Do you remember Padilla for pitching, or do you remember Padilla's flotilla?
The latter.
Exactly. Do you remember Omar Dahl for anything productive?
No.
Do you remember Nelson Figueroa for anything productive? That's exactly right. You know what I remember Travis Lee for? Being a terrible first baseman with an even worse work ethic. You got four players in exchange for Curt Schilling, and none of them were any good. None of them. Now let's take a look to 2003. The Diamondbacks flipped Schilling to the Red Sox in November of 2003, the offseason. What did the Red Sox do in 2004?
World Series.
They won the World Series. You know what the Diamondbacks got back? Casey Fossum, Brandon Lyon, Jorge De La Rosa, and a guy that doesn't even have a clickable link. Now, Jorge De La Rosa was serviceable for the Rockies in both a starter and reliever role, but Brandon Lyon and Casey Fossum, none of those guys stand out to you. You do not trade quality for quantity. You never do it. So allow me to rant here and go out on a little bit of a tangent. I have been tired for the past 9 years of listening to both your what you would call Flyers fans and listening to Philadelphia sports fans tell me that the Flyers need to ship Claude Giroux out of town because he's not worth the C. He isn't that productive.
I hate this argument.
Let me run you down some numbers. Over the last 10 seasons, do you know, Nat, off the top of your head, how many players have scored more points than Claude Giroux in the NHL?
I believe it is three.
The answer's three. It's, by the way, just future Hall of Famer Alexander Ovechkin. Future Hall of Famer Sidney Crosby, and for something completely different, future Hall of Famer Patrick Kane.
Whose phantom goal, I still don't know how that went in.
I'm convinced it didn't. I'm convinced it was teleported into a loophole, and then the loophole found its way behind Michael Layton. Because there's no way by physics that puck goes through Layton's pads. But the guy has 741 points in 763 games played.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, but 65 points in 69 playoff games, right?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I will take your word for it that that's correct. 741 points in the last 10 seasons. So that's an average of 74 points per year. Pretty darn good, if you ask me, for a guy that shouldn't be the captain.
And second in scoring in the 2017-18 season behind only Connor McDavid.
Who, by the way, is on his way to being a future Hall of Famer if he keeps playing the way he's playing. Let's take a look at the goal numbers. The goal numbers are a little bit lower because we all know Claude Giroux is much more of an assist guy than he is a goals guy. He's got 232 goals. That's good for 22nd over the last 10 seasons. That in and of itself is not amazing, but he's within the top 25. Let's take a look at assists. You know where Claude Giroux sits on assists in the last 10 seasons?
I believe he's either number one or number two.
He's number one. He's the only player with 500 points when it comes to assists. He has 509 assists. Nick Backstrom, number two, 495. 741 points in the last 10 seasons. Well, Tyler, Sidney Crosby played over 100 games less due to injury and has 40 more points.
Good for you.
Sidney Crosby is one of the best top two players in the NHL currently and over the last 10 years. Alexander Ovechkin played 7 less games. He's got eight more points. Alexander Ovechkin, in my opinion, is the greatest goal scorer of my lifetime. Because I caught, you know, Lemieux on the back end and that kind of thing. And he's a better goal scorer to me than Ginla. He's a better goal scorer than guys like Sakic and Modano.
And if it weren't for lockouts and, of course, you know, what's going on right now, he could be one of the greatest goal scorers of all time.
Right. It's exactly correct. I can't get behind this argument of trading Claude Giroux. That was my tangent that I was saving for a while. I know that that argument has died down because the Flyers were super relevant for the first time in years. But it's not just Philadelphia fans. You know, because even as a Flyers guy, even as a hockey guy, I know that you can recognize there are Flyers fans and then there are Philadelphia fans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm a Philadelphia fan who roots for the Flyers as well as the three other teams. There are fans that are just Flyers fans. It's not just coming from the people like myself. I've heard this argument from people like you. Now, I'm not saying you're just a Flyers fan, but you're more knowledgeable about hockey than me.
And hockey is hands down my number one.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I've heard people like yourself who claim hockey to be their number one sport, who claim the Flyers to be their number one team, that want Claude Giroux out of town. Because either he has done, what they say, nothing in the playoffs, or isn't the top flight scorer like Ovechkin or Crosby or Malkin or Stamkos. Or he's not a good leader, which that one to me is like the biggest head scratcher. Because how do you know he's not a good leader? Are you in the Flyers clubhouse every day? Are you in the Flyers locker room? The answer is probably no. So how do you know he's not a good leader?
And he's been with the organization for 14 years now.
Right, going on 15 seasons, he's been with the organization. He's been nothing but... I've never heard a bad word said about Claude Giroux on or off the ice, except for, oh, the Flyers should get rid of Claude Giroux and rebuild. They've done a pretty darn good job of rebuilding with Claude Giroux. I understand that he's probably not going to... Well, he may have if the season had held up, but he's probably not going to see a Stanley Cup with this team.
And I understand, I get where people are coming from, where they don't necessarily like Giroux, or they don't think he's the best. But here's one thing that I want to propose to the people out there. If you're one of those people that say, strip Claude Giroux of the captaincy, who do you give the captaincy to? Because I've never heard a solid answer from anybody about this. I've always just heard, don't make him the captain anymore.
The only answer that I would ever be able to justify in the last... How long has Claude Giroux been the captain for? In the last 10 years? Has he been the captain for 10 seasons? That's a rough estimate. I don't know if that answer to be correct.
Who, Giroux?
Giroux.
He's been the captain since 2013.
Okay, so it's been 7 seasons he's been the captain for. There is one answer that I find acceptable when it comes to who could be the captain over Claude Giroux, and it was Wayne Simmonds. And I still would not put Giroux over Simmonds.
See, that...
Here's why I disagree with that.
And I disagree with that because in a sit-down interview, it's Claude Giroux and Wayne Simmonds. They're part of the same interview. And I forget who it was who was interviewing them, but they said, what do you think of Claude Giroux as a captain? And Wayne Simmonds said, he's a great captain. I look to him as a leader. That's why I disagree with Wayne Simmonds being captain of the Philadelphia Flyers if you were ever given the chance, because he looks much to Claude Giroux as the leader.
That further solidifies my point that this is not you don't take this thing for, it's not like some silly little thing that you're putting a letter on a guy's jersey. So the trade Claude Giroux people, I know that it's stopped over the last couple of years. Maybe not over the last couple of years, I should say over the last couple of months, it's stopped because of the run the Flyers have made. And who knows if we'll ever get a chance to see if this will ever manifest into anything. Right now, we don't know. But what I will tell you is, anybody that's left in the trade Claude Giroux category, you are totally missing the point. 610-632-0975. We're going to take a quick commercial break. On the other side, we will continue the conversation about the strangest look in a new jersey, who you had the hardest time saying goodbye to, why trading quality is not worth quantity, and the greatest movie scenes of all time, because Avengers Endgame has the new greatest movie scene of all time in my life. 610-632-0975. That's Nat Marlowe. You just heard him. He's producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
I gotta tell you, I feel a lot better after I got that off my chest. I got it off my chest to say in the last segment that please stop trying to trade superstars. You don't get quality return. You get quantity return. Doesn't matter if it's Claude Giroux. Doesn't matter if you're one of the people that still want to trade either Ben Simmonds or Joel Embiid. You don't get quality return. Quantity return does me no good for a team that's supposed to be competing. Which is why, and again, I said this earlier in the show, full transparency, I'll admit when I'm wrong, I thought that trading McCoy, meaning LeSean McCoy at the time, for Kiko Alonso was an okay move because the Eagles' linebacking depth was paper thin. That is what I thought was quality for quality. Now, it ended up being quality for garbage. It wasn't even quantity, it was just garbage, but I thought for the most part that that was an okay trade. Turned out I was wrong, but in theory, in my head, doing the math that I probably shouldn't do, it at least made sense at the time. I can't trade quality for quantity. I don't need an Omar Dahl in my life. I don't need Travis Lee, Vicente Padilla, or Nelson Figueroa. And I sure as heck don't need all four of them at once. You know what else I don't need? Keeping with the baseball theme. I don't need, as much as I love Polanco, I don't need Placido Polanco and Mike Smith, or Mike Timlin and Bud Smith. For Scott Rolen. Didn't need that in my life. I know a lot of people around here didn't like Scott Rolen, but you traded a Hall of Famer for a decent second baseman and Dreck I will never, ever, ever do quantity over quality. 610-632-0975. You know, I saw something as I'm scrolling through Twitter earlier in the break. And I have to go and Oh, okay, here it is. According to reports, the Minnesota Vikings are agreeing to a deal with free agent wide receiver Laquon Treadwell. Now, obviously, Treadwell was a first-round pick by the Vikings out of Ole Miss a few seasons back. Did you know the stats? You can stop me if you've heard it. Now, the number has increased by one. The Atlanta Falcons, on their offense alone, could rotationally put in place 11 first-round picks this upcoming season.
What?
Of course, they're going to start Matt Ryan at quarterback and Todd Gurley at running back. And Julio Jones is a first round pick. Let me go take a look. Let me go take a look and see some of the other ones. I know they have a couple offensive linemen that they're going to play. Here you go. Let's go to the Atlanta Falcons homepage. Here are the guys that are going to be first round picks. Julio Jones at wide receiver. Calvin Ridley at wide receiver. Hayden Hurst is a former first-round pick of the Baltimore Ravens. He was traded to the Falcons this offseason. Alex Mack is a former first-round pick at center. Jake Matthews at left tackle. James Carpenter at left guard. Chris Lindstrom at right guard. Caleb McGarry at left tackle, or right tackle, excuse me. I don't know if you're keeping track at home. That's five offensive linemen. That's all of their offensive linemen are former first-round picks. Matt Ryan at quarterback. Todd Gurley at running back. And Laquon Treadwell being added. Now, he's not going to be a starter, but he'll be in the rotation, I'd assume. He's going to be their deep threat. That gives them 11 first-round picks just on the offensive side of things. If there was a team that I would say is destined to be the team that missed the playoffs last season that's going to make it this year, because that turnover happens all the time in the NFL, there are something like six new playoff teams every single year. If I was to pick a team that missed the playoffs last year that was going to make it this upcoming season, my money's on the Atlanta Falcons.
Would you consider them one of the biggest dark horses in the NFL?
It's funny that you ask that, because I thought that they were going to be a dark horse before free agency began, because I thought that they had a really horrendous start to the NFL season and bounced back really nicely in the second half. In the first half, I think they were 1-7. Or 1-6. Their lone win was against the Eagles in week two. I said that they were going to be a sleeper playoff team before free agency happened. Now, I think Hayden Hurst is a downgrade from Austin Hooper at tight end, but that was seemingly a foregone conclusion. You add Todd Gurley, who at this point is probably par with Devonta Freeman, but you've got Calvin Ridley another year into his NFL career. I think he's a blossoming receiving star. Julio Jones is, of course, a star. And five offensive linemen who are going to start that are former first-round picks. One thing that's really well documented about myself: I don't like Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan is the most overrated quarterback in the NFL. To me, it's Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford, number one and number two. Because for your pay grade, you don't perform consistently enough. But if you're going to ask me who's a dark horse team, I don't know if they're dark horse anymore, quote unquote, because of the fact that they have made all of these moves. But to me, they are a team from last season that is going to make the playoffs from this season. If you're going to ask me who is the dark horse team of the NFL this year, without the NFL draft happening, without, you know, with free agency happening as it's happened, I'm really hesitant to say this because I don't want to say this over the Philadelphia airwaves. But if you're going to ask me who a dark horse team is going into 2020, it might be the New York Giants. Daniel Jones in year number two. I don't know if I said this yesterday. I don't know if he's going to take Carson Wentz leaps and elevations forward, but I do think he's going to take a step forward. I think that if they draft correctly, and I've been on the record saying the Giants have the most important draft capital in all of the early picks in the first round. Because if you're the New York Giants, you sit there at four, you've got one of two situations happening, maybe one of three. Situation number one, The Cincinnati Bengals take Joe Burrow, number one overall, as we all expect. Number two, the Washington Redskins take Chase Young, as we all expect. If that's the case, I would not be shocked to see either the Detroit Lions take a quarterback at number two or number three, or a trade happen in which either the Dolphins or the Chargers trade up to the number three spot and flip-flop with the Detroit Lions, and they take a quarterback. If that's the case, two out of the first three picks are quarterbacks. You don't need one. Daniel Jones is your guy. The only player that is not available to you is Chase Young. You have your choice of the lot. You have your choice of literally every defensive player not named Chase Young and every offensive player that's not a quarterback. That's like scenario number one that works out best for the New York Giants. Scenario number two, again, Joe Burrow goes number one overall, and either the Washington Redskins or a team trades with the Redskins to take a quarterback. If that's the case, the Lions, I think, would be hard-pressed to pass on Chase Young. So again, you find yourself in the exact same spot. Rarity, but option number three. The Bengals take Joe Burrow number one. The Redskins or another team take a quarterback at number two. Rarity comes in, the Lions or another team take a quarterback at number three. All of a sudden, you've got quarterback one, quarterback two, quarterback three. You legitimately, at that point, have your pick of any player you want in all of college football. And at that point, if Chase Young falls to number four, Chase Young won't be on the board at number five. So the New York Giants, to me, have the most important draft capital, the most important draft stock of all the teams in the NFL. Because the Bengals, I think, are going to take Burrow. I don't think they're going to trade that pick. I think they'd be foolish to ride with Ryan Finley for another season or bring back Andy Dalton or bring back a free agent of some kind.
I mean, Burrow, why wouldn't you start him right away?
Right, that's the thing. We made mention of that earlier. Of the quarterbacks that are going to start right away, it's Joe Burrow. He would be the Bengals guy. So they almost certainly are going to take Joe Burrow at number one. If they don't, things get a little topsy-turvy. But Joe Burrow is going to go number one overall, whether it's the Bengals or the Dolphins, I'd imagine. After that, the Giants have the best draft stock in the entire draft because they're the only team, in my opinion, in the top five. And I like Dwayne Haskins. I don't think Dwayne Haskins is a bad quarterback, but he's not as good as Daniel Jones. So the Giants, to me, are the only team in the top five or six that doesn't have quarterback issues. They've got draft capital. They've got draft stock. Imagine if a team comes calling, let's say, even the Miami Dolphins or the Chargers. If you're the Giants and the Miami Dolphins call you, who I believe have, what, the number five pick? I think that that's the case. Maybe they have six. Let's take a look real quick so I'm not making stuff up. Okay, the Dolphins have five. If the Dolphins call you and the Bengals have taken Burrow and Washington takes Chase Young, or Washington takes a quarterback and Detroit takes Chase Young, and that's conceivably the best defensive player off the board, and the Dolphins call you and say, we will give you five, and I doubt that they'd give up 26, but let's just say we'll give you five and 26 for four. You'd be foolish not to take it. You're getting another first-round pick to move back one spot for a draft pick that you know you don't need a quarterback for? Even if they say we'll give you five and a third-round pick, we'll give you pick number 70, five and 70 for four. You can't turn that down if you're the Giants.
You're golden in that.
You're doing nothing but gaining capital by making that trade. You can't lose because Chase Young's off the board. And you know the Dolphins want a quarterback. Even if they offer you 70, I'm making the deal. 610-632-0975. Eric in Staten Island, you're going to be the first one up on the other side. I got off on a little bit of a tangent on the Giants there, but we will talk to you as the first caller in our 7 o'clock hour, and then it can be you. 610-632-0975. We've got an hour left in the program. That's Nat Marlowe. I'm Tyler Zuli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.